We do now have Andrew Berkshire on the line from Sportsnet. Follow his work at Andrew Berkshire on Twitter and also his great work at sportsnet.ca. Burke, long time no talk. How's it going?
Pretty good, guys. Pretty good. I'm just, you know, chilling inside the house. It's 41 degrees here in Montreal.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. Okay, so we want to talk on about this. These playoff series that are coming up, because you do great work with the analytics and, you know, really in-depth, honest previews. How difficult is for you, you know, trying to project what this upcoming tournament might be like when you consider, you know, the volatility of a play-in round and then just in general this layoff?
Yeah, it's real, real tough. Like, I was going to ask by Galen, my editor at Sportsnet, to do a few different things, and I'm like, man, you know, I don't know necessarily how there are certain things. This is probably the most difficult like playoff to approach that I've ever looked at, just because, like, there's not just volatility in the play-in round. It's, you know, the long layoff, who gets the benefit from the rest, who comes back rusty. It's hard to project that. And then there's, like, who could test positive and be held out,
right? Who
have a pre-existing condition that decides not to play at the last minute, you know, like, or somebody who has, like, a kid born and decides that they need to stay home with their wife and newborn. Like, there's so many things that could change at the last minute. And then it's just like, what part of the season should we really look at that would be predictive of now? Would it be, you know, the last 25 to 30 games before the season was put on pause, or is it the whole season? How much is October representative of hockey that's going to be played in August? You know, like, sure, the rosters are the same, but things can change so much. I think one thing that I look at that might be the biggest factor that's hard to project is how much better are young rookies going to be? You know, like, we saw how great Quinn Hughes was this year. We've seen now for 2 years with Elias Pettersson, but they've had now months to just kind of sit around and work it out, hone their skills a little bit, get stronger. They're going to come in. They're going to be the guys that aren't going to feel the rust, I think. You know, it's the older guys. They'll be mentally prepared, and they'll know what it takes, and they'll get it, shake it off quickly. But I think it's tougher to get back into it when you're a little bit older. Those young guys, I feel like those are going to be the ones that really take over these playoffs and make the big impacts early, especially early on. I'm really interested to see if we see the kind of things that you expect from, like, you know, a third season from Elias Pettersson to show up, or a sophomore season from Quinn Hughes, you know, just these big leaps in their game that wouldn't have necessarily happened if the playoffs would have proceeded on schedule. And I find that incredibly interesting. I think it's going to be must-see TV. I just don't know how to project it at all.
Well, and when it comes to the style of play and the way the games are played, it may resemble much more what we see at the start of a season, because these guys have had all this downtime. Is there a way for you to quantify or to provide insight into how different games are when we play a regular season between, say, when the season starts in October and when the playoffs start in April, and what some of the differences we might see in these games in the style of play could be? Because, you know, we know from watching past seasons that certainly intensity ratchets up over the season. Teams get their systems together more. And the games that we see in March are often quite different than the ones we see in October.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually wrote about this kind of on for Sportsnet.ca about specifically looking at how goal scoring trends change over the course of the season. And unfortunately, over the last two seasons, things really evened out a lot. There wasn't a lot of variation between each month of the season. But typically over the last 10 years, October is the highest scoring month of the season. Then November is actually the lowest scoring, as it seems like every coach is like, whoa, stop that. No, this is too sloppy, too disorganized. We're going to hammer down and play defense. And just the last 2 weeks of the season, there's this huge drop off as, like, every team that's in the playoff hunt just really tightens things up. right? And then you get into the playoffs and, you know, things kind of even out, but there's not as much scoring. But what I found really interesting was that even strength scoring stays about the same and even goes up towards the end of the season. Teams get better at breaking each other's defensive schemes down at even strength. So over the last 2 years, there's just been this, you don't see it if you look at it from an all situations perspective, but each month the even strength scoring goes up a tiny, tiny little bit. And then the special team scoring goes down a little bit. And it's because as the season goes on, fewer and fewer power plays are called. It's not that teams are getting worse in the power play as the season goes on. That's been the big driver of the change in goal scoring as seasons go on. So I wonder how the NHL wants to approach officiating for these playoffs, because I think that is highly correlated to how much scoring we'll see. So that really interests me. Are they going to do like a beginning of the season crackdown and like remind all these guys that this is how you have to play and you can't be cheating all the time? Or is it just going to be playoffs as usual and it's going to be sloppy and no penalties are called and it's just going to be a total mess?
Well, the other thing you could build off with that conversation too is how is the officiating going to be impacted by a lack of fan attendance? And, you know, most referees would tell you that that doesn't have any sort of impact. But, you know, when you've got 20,000 people booing you, you know, it would be hard for any person not to react to that in some way, shape or form. So, you know, for a team like the Canucks, who had one of the top power plays in the league, where the NHL decides to go with that officiating could really define their ability to have success in the playoffs, couldn't it?
Absolutely. And the other thing is that these teams, you know, as much as they've had off time, it's not like they've been together with their coaching staffs and able to, you know, like work on their weaknesses. So like the weaknesses that teams have shown throughout the season should theoretically still be pretty much the exact same, right? Like if you struggle defending off the rush like the Canucks do, then you're probably going to still have that weakness. And there's just not a lot of time, especially not practice time, with these protocols that they have to follow right now, where you have limited amounts of players on the ice. It's much tougher to get these like high intensity practices with everyone going. It's very interesting to me that like working on your own game is going to be very difficult. It's going to be very geared towards trying to figure out the opponent, which, you know, the playoffs always is, but the half of coaching has to be about your own game too. And it's going to be tough to see, you know, how coaches balance that. And I wonder if it's going to be a situation where, like with the Canucks power play, you just kind of lean into your strengths and you're like, okay, we're going to really have like carries. Let's draw a lot of penalties. Let's force the issue, play with speed, try to get these guys hooking as much as they can. And that's the way that you've got to play, right? It'll be very interesting to see how different teams handle that. I think we might see, you know, like a more varied style of hockey between different teams than we've seen in recent years. At least I hope so. I think this is poised to be an extremely interesting playoffs with different looking hockey than we've seen in a long time, if that makes sense.
Well, and you know, you talk about the coaching perspective. What about a guy like Dean Evason, who, you know, hadn't had a ton of time as the head coach of the Minnesota Wild? Is there a chance that he comes in and tries to install some different systems and we see a very different Minnesota Wild team than we've seen in the past? Or is he just not going to have enough time to do that? Like, you know, from a Canucks series perspective, that'll be fascinating to see what exactly this Minnesota Wild team looks like when the puck drops at the end of the month.
Yeah, that's one thing. Like, I know I haven't spoken with him directly, but I've spoken to other members of the media in Montreal, and they spoke with Claude Julien when he took over in the middle of the season. And he pretty much laid it out that, like, in the middle of the year, there's not much that you can change. You can kind of be a different voice in the room and, you know, give different players a shot in different spots and get them going. And sometimes if players have tuned out a coach, that's enough to get them going and playing their best. But there's just not enough time and not enough practice time to instill big changes in the system. You can change little things like, you know, like where a player should be on the breakout and try to like change their muscle memory a little bit. But it's far more likely if you try to change things a lot that you're going to get a bunch of mistakes than it is that you'll improve the team. So that comes with the next training camp kind of thing. So I would assume that we will see the Minnesota Wild that we are accustomed to, with maybe different players getting more ice time or less ice time, more power play time, things like that. Maybe a shift towards more of the younger players. It seemed like, I think, Kevin Fiala was having a breakout season. So lots of him out there, I would assume.
Andrew Berkshire joining us here on Social Distance Central and Sportsnet 650. Okay, we've talked about the things that we are uncertain on. You did mention something that you do know, that the Canucks defending off the rush. How does that play in part to Minnesota and how they create off the rush? What do your numbers tell you about that?
Well, I got to tell you, when I was looking through for Sportsnet a few weeks ago and looking at the winners and the losers of the way that this play-in round was set up, the Canucks were definitely the team that I thought were the biggest losers here. They went from, you know, a playoff spot guaranteed to facing a team that underperformed most of the season only due to goaltending. Devin Dubnyk was terrible this year, like probably the worst goaltender in the league when you factor in how good the Wild are defensively. So that could, you know, remain the same. Dubnyk could just be terrible and the Canucks could walk over the Wild easily, or he could do that goalie thing where a terrible goalie has, you know, four or five good games in a row and the Wild could be an incredibly tough challenge for the Canucks, because the Canucks, they started the year out really positively by the underlying numbers. And I know I wrote about it a couple times that I was surprised at how big the change was for them, and, you know, like how big of a change having Quinn Hughes available to them is, and sophomore season from Pettersson. But over the course of the year, they wore down at even strength and relied more and more on their power play. And one consistent issue that they had was off the rush, both for and against. They were the team that, I believe, at the point that the season was paused, they generated the fewest scoring chances in the league off the rush and the most against off the rush. So that's something that another team can focus on and say, okay, this is the place where we can hit these guys up. And we saw a team that was smartly coached, like the Colorado Avalanche last year, where they were up against the heavily favored Calgary Flames. And the Flames were good at attacking off the rush, but pretty mediocre at defending. And the Avalanche just decided to play a high-speed rush game, and they blitzed them. And it wasn't even close in that series. It was incredible the degree to which they outplayed the Calgary Flames, who were a bit slower of a team. And I don't think the Canucks are slow. I don't think that's their issue. But if the Minnesota Wild can adapt their style a little bit and start attacking off the rush, I do think that the Canucks could be in serious trouble. Then again, goaltending, you know, so much is up in here about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, talking about these, you know, different styles and traits that teams have, when you look at it from that perspective and from the underlying numbers of which teams trend well in each parts of the game, what do you think is the most compelling of the play-in series in terms of a tactical matchup between two teams?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I love the Penguins-Canadiens matchup, because the Canadiens are a team that on paper, by the analytics, should have been a team this year, and things just didn't work out for them. They generate chances better than anyone except for the Carolina Hurricanes, but they just don't have very many high-end goal scorers, and they weren't able to finish a lot of those chances. And then Carey Price had long stretches of poor play, and that really just took them out of it, right? So are they going to get a nice little bit of luck in the first round and have Carey Price play well and then score on a higher percentage of their opportunities than they normally would have? And then all of a sudden the Penguins, who are, again, on paper, the superior team, in a bit of trouble, because the Penguins, you know, they were a team that they changed starting goaltenders this year. They had their struggles too. So they're a very good team. They have the star power that the Canadiens don't, but they're not, you know, the world-beating team that they were a couple of years ago. They've lost some depth. They have some injuries that may return, may not. So it's very up in the air. And I think Claude Julien is a very underrated coach. I think people kind of get down on him here because the Canadiens have missed the playoffs, but he just hasn't had the rosters the last few years. So I think it's really interesting to see if the Canadiens' speed and aggression game can match up well against the Penguins.
A couple more minutes here with Andrew Berkshire of Sportsnet, joining Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor. So As we look just beyond, you know, the games and, you know, kind of the landscape we're in, because I do like talking to you about team building and everything like that. When we look at this flat cap that's coming in for 2 years, and obviously some teams are going to have some challenges, who to you is most primed to, you know, pounce on potential opportunities? And I guess what's going to be an inefficiency that we should be looking at as teams try to figure out how to live in this flat cap world?
Well, it would really suck if a team had a goaltender that they traded away that retired on them early and they couldn't take a capture penalty. So that would really be unfortunate. But as you know, that would never happen.
No.
Yeah, there are definitely some teams out there. Again, the Montreal Canadiens have a ton of cap space that they just have refused to use for the last several years. So they could be a team that could pounce on it. I am so unclear on how things really work with the cap, though, because it seems like every year a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs is over the cap, and that somehow Brandon Pridham is able to negotiate a situation where they're like saving a couple bucks every day, and at the end of the season they're under the cap. It's crazy to see how different teams that are up against it negotiate those situations and find loopholes and, you know, put a guy on waivers on the right day and save a ton of money down the stretch. So I never count teams that are up against the cap out if they have, you know, a smart person in there running the money game for them, because, you know, even when the cap first came in, I'm sure you guys remember the Philadelphia Flyers had like three or four old bad players on somewhat sketchy long-term injured reserve situation. And it seemed like they had that going for like the first 10 years of the cap and space under the cap.
He is Andrew Berkshire. Follow him on Twitter at Andrew Berkshire, and also check out his work at sportsnet.ca. Berk, thank you very much, man.
My pleasure. Talk to you guys soon.